This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. It's Friday, so that means we assemble our weekly news panel. Let's welcome into the show Megan Gilmore and Michelle McQuigg. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay.
And we also say hello to Michelle McQuigg. Hello, Michelle.
Good morning, everybody.
So we've got three topics to discuss. Let's check into our first one. Midday on Wednesday, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau checked out from his quarantine hotel roughly 12 hours after he checked in. Trudeau's office says he received his negative COVID-19 test on Wednesday morning, and his office says that Trudeau will follow public health rules and advice for Canadians returning from travel abroad, as well as officials and journalists who also went overseas as part of the G7 and NATO summits. The rules include quarantining for 14 days and taking another COVID-19 test about 7 days after arrival. Trudeau's overnight stay in a hotel came after his Liberal government has spent months defending the policy of forcing most Canadians returning from international travel to quarantine in a hotel for up to 3 days at their own expense. An expert review panel recently said the hotel quarantine policy had no scientific basis and recommended the government scrap it. The panel also noted that travelers who fly to the United States and return across a land border face no such hotel quarantine. I also want to mention here the opposition conservatives have slammed the fact that the Ottawa hotel that Trudeau stayed at is not one of the government approved accommodations. So guys, I want to pull at a couple of different threads here. The Prime Minister did not stay at one of the government approved quarantine hotels. I'm kind of curious to know what your reaction is to that, because my knee jerk is reaction is one of, come on, bro, be like the rest of us. But then as I unjerk my knee, does it maybe make sense for a national security protocol for the Prime Minister to stay somewhere that isn't exactly known to the public? Michelle, what's your reaction to when you find out the Prime Minister didn't stay at one of the sanctioned quarantine hotels?
Honestly, kind of the same as yours. The security angle is an interesting one, and one that I haven't heard raised very much, a bit to my surprise, and there's something to it. But the optics are really bad. You just can't get away from that. Not only was a fair bit was made of the fact that the Prime Minister intended to abide by the quarantine rules, or that was at least how it was presented. And technically, I suppose it's still true. He did check into a quarantine hotel for, I'm not even sure if it was one full night. So
about 12 hours. It was about 12 hours. Yeah.
You just can't get away from the fact that the optics were really terrible, especially when you consider how they were framed prior to the trip.
I did enjoy in some of the reframing that went on after the fact, it was made very clear. It was a three and a half star airport hotel. It wasn't the Chateau Laurier. He didn't stay at the Westin. He didn't stay at the Lord Elgin. No. It was just a regular airport hotel like the rest
right
of
on.
Us. Megan, what was your reaction when you found out the Prime Minister didn't stay at one of the sanctioned quarantine hotels?
I think my reaction is pretty similar to everyone else. The optics, like you've said, are terrible. I think we're at the point now where, and we're going to get into this soon, I think, there's so many concerns people have about the quarantine hotel policy in general, that anything is just adding fuel to the fire here.
Mm-hmm.
So there's also that the optics are terrible, but you're right. There is a practical security concern that, you know, Justin Trudeau is a head of state. Like that's the fact of his life, regardless of a pandemic, and there needs to be security concerns for that. I mean, like, you can imagine it would be even worse had he gone to a quarantine hotel and there had been a security breach and more people would be at risk. So really there was no, I don't think there's necessarily a good way to get in or out of this story.
Yeah, absolutely. So, guys, I want to come back to the quarantine hotels in just a moment, but let's at least put ourselves over in Europe for the G7 and NATO summits as some of the images were emerging and some of the stories were coming out. Did you guys have any envy for some of the leaders who were gathering and hanging out with Queen Elizabeth with their giant ceremonial sword cutting a cake? By the way, like, that's something I want to reinstitute post-pandemic. Ceremonial swords at my parties where we cut cake. Michelle, any
yes.
envy of these world leaders hanging out and carousing?
I wrote Club Together and Gave a Katana for Christmas.
Oh, gosh.
No, I can't say I was terribly envious about that. And it might possibly be because gatherings like this don't exactly sound like my idea of a good time. It doesn't tick my box in that sense. But even the revelry and the socializing, and nice as it might have been to get a few photo ops on a pretty British beach, no, there's still some mental adjustment going on around exiting home on a more regular basis. Mm-hmm. So I'm not quite ready for politician envy quite yet.
Megan, any envy on your behalf of these politicians who seem to be having a pretty good time in Brussels and England?
I don't think I've ever envied a politician at a G7 summit, to be honest. They don't sound like, oh boy, that was a really fun, relaxing trip. That's not typically how it goes. So, and that I think as a professional, I think about the journalists working at G7 summit, and while that must be fascinating to watch history happen and unfold in front of your eyes, also sounds really stressful as well. I think what I'm most jealous of, besides the immense amount of hand-eye coordination you would need, especially as a senior citizen, to cut a piece of cake with a sword, which I'm never going to be able to do, let's be honest. I think what I would be most jealous of the fact that, hey, people are spending time together and that's okay. You can do that. That's fine. And it's considered normal and accepted because human beings need to be with other human beings.
Yeah, President Joe Biden got to have high tea with the Queen after the G7 summit. You know, that's high ranking stuff right there.
I'm hearing some envy. Am I hearing envy?
A little tiny bit. Little time.
High tea is great. I've done it before, not with President Biden or with the Queen, at a tea house in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. And it was great. So, Dave, if you ever want to do that post-pandemic, I'm down for it.
All right. Bring on the scones. All right. Let's jump back into the world of quarantine hotels here. Because honestly, Michelle, you and I talked about it the Monday after they went into effect. And really, we haven't talked about it much on the show at all. As mentioned in that report put out by an expert panel submitted to Parliament a couple of weeks ago, people traveling by land were not subject to a quarantine hotel. You could also pay just $5,000, pay a fine out of your pocket, skip the hotel, and do quarantine your own way. Michelle, did those exemptions strike you as a bit odd and maybe even unfair?
They definitely were unusual and drew a fair bit of heat even before the policy took effect. And that was even before the notion of the rates that people had to pay were factored in. So the land exemption in particular was pretty baffling. That was one that no one really seemed to understand from the outset. This is at no point has this not been a controversial policy. Mm-hmm. So the panel was particularly interesting for me. The conclusion of lack of scientific merit to this policy was one that if you weren't planning to dig it out, I'm going to go ahead and do it because I find it fascinating. The government has relied so much on the line, not just this government, but all of them have relied on lines like we're following the science, we're listening to the experts, we're doing what we're being told is best to do. And it's a bit difficult to see how that hotel policy falls in light of this finding. I would love to have a bit more information on the kind of findings that led to its drafting in the first place. This is a theme I keep hitting on the show of we don't know a lot of what went on behind the closed doors that led to the various COVID-related policies that have taken shape. This is a classic example, unless the aim was just to disincentivize travel, which of course might be what's on the table here.
Right. So, Michelle, you've rolled the ball forward here. So let's keep rolling with it. Absolutely. We've heard so many politicians of all stripes over the course of the pandemic saying, we're following the science, we're following the science, we're following the science, which sounds fantastic at a press conference, looks amazing in a press release. But there is certainly an impracticality to it, because if we were following the science, we would have just like shut down everything for like 2-3 weeks. But it's obviously impractical. We have to start making some choices about what is essential. And then we get into something like a hotel quarantine policy. This panel comes out and says, there's not a lot of scientific evidence to this. But to me, in my mind, I never necessarily saw it as a scientific public health policy so much as it was meant to be a deterrent of non-essential travel. Hey, you want to go to Las Vegas on Monday to go watch the Montreal Canadiens play the Vegas Golden Knights? Well, guess what? That is a non-essential trip. And if you want to make that trip, it's going to cost you some money and it's going to cost you some inconvenience and maybe even a little bit of discomfort on the back end of your trip. It strikes me as a deterrent. But Megan, what do you make of that concept of maybe this grappling we've had to do throughout the pandemic about public policy not always having its truest absolute roots in the science?
I think that has been a concern this whole time. And how many months are we in now? 15, 16? I don't even know anymore.
I've lost count.
They, by this point, these concerns for the people who have been concerned about this already from the beginning, like their concern level is just higher than it's ever been. And people who weren't concerned but are now maybe getting concerned, their concern level is getting higher. So it's always been, there's always going to be there. I, like you, Dave, definitely read this as a deterrent policy. And I don't think we should forget that shortly after, I believe, these quarantine hotels, as we like to call them, became a thing, there were also reports about sexual assault happening at these quarantine hotels. There were reports about, like, it's just practical safety conditions there. So I think people have good reason to be concerned about what's happening at these quarantine hotels. Like Michelle said, what was the thought process behind this? Why did we make this decision? But like you, Dave, I never really saw this as a scientific measure. I saw this as a deterrent measure.
Which then leads to a broader question about how much we've allowed politicians to play loose when it comes to science or tying policy to science. Have we let them be too loose in regards to that? While still understanding there needs to be some balance here. Michelle, what do you make of that balance we've tried to strike for, again, the lost count of 15 to 18, who knows how many months?
Yeah, by my math, it's 15, but never trust my math, as anyone who ever knows me will tell you. There's definitely been a broad variety of applications of follow the science, and that's been very interesting to watch. What I find interesting more recently is the way people will now more actively ignore it. I'm thinking specifically of Ontario and the decision to return to schools. You had scientists telling the government that it was safe to send them back, mm-hmm. that it was probably a good idea to send them back. So at that point, you saw the premier farming this question out to other sources of information, trying to get other answers. And then the decision was ultimately made not to reinstate school for the year. So that was a very clear and overt example of ignoring the science from a government who has touted its record on doing the opposite a lot of the time. And that isn't necessarily true. There have been several occasions when the round table that advises the premier has offered different advice than what actually played out. Mm-hmm. So we've allowed them to stand behind that line, but not necessarily held their feet to the fire on it and insisted that that following actually takes place or get some answers as to why they're not actually necessarily doing what they say they're doing. Mm-hmm. I don't know to what degree that's been the case in other jurisdictions. Ontario has been a bit of an outlier COVID-wise in a variety of areas. So I don't necessarily think it's fair to apply the same brush to all governments here, but it's definitely happened. And people don't seem to be willing to really commit. In fairness, I have heard journalists try to seek those answers and simply be rebuffed. I'd say it has become a bit of a line.
Science is also a little bit difficult to cover, right? Because as we've learned on things like, and we're going to talk about this in the next topic, when you have an organization like the National Advisory Committee on Immunization, the science changes, the science evolves, right? So it's one mm-hmm. thing to say we're following the science, but then what happens when the science moves, right? That's part of the conversation as well.
That's my point, though. And when you have scientists publicly saying X and government publicly doing Y, the disconnect is very evident.
Yeah, it's
and
very clear.
That, it's those connecting of dots that I think needs to be done a little bit more.
Guys, we are past late checkout on this topic, so we got to go. Thank you for indulging me in this conversation. Coming up next, access to certain events in the United States is dependent on which vaccine you received. We'll explore this vaccine favoritism. This is the Now News Panel on AMI. You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.